and outings were arranged and coaxed into existence by Adam and Adam alone. I could see he was trying very hard to create a new history for us as friends. I left Adam and Krishna inside and went to skate by myself so I could try going faster. After a few rounds, I got my speed up pretty good. I saw Adam and Krishna enter the rink. I sped up enough to go around once and pass them. They tried to catch up, and then, like a pile of dominoes, we all fell on top of each other. Krishna and I couldn't stop laughing long enough to get up, and we struggled to stand, our bodies tangled on the ice. Adam got up and extended his hand to help me. Krishna was still scrambling around my feet. She looked up toward me.
Mom, take his hand. Let Dad help you.
Family was important to both Adam and me, and I wanted to somehow instill that in Krishna, too. But I could not underline the importance of family unless I accepted the whole of hers. So rather than be mired by the ugliness of our past, I came to be propelled forward by our shared love for her. In a sense, it was the same love and forgiveness Teddy had shown me. Unconditional in the wake of everything that had happened, boundless in its generosity. It was easy to follow his example for Krishna's sake. I am sure Krishna's father had some forgiving to do as well in my regard. If he had trouble with this, he did not show it or speak of needing anything from me to do it. Yeah, Mommy, let me help you. We went back out into the night, the three of us together, skating, hand in hand. First of all, my deep gratitude goes to Daniel Halpern, Libby Edelson, and Luke Janklow, without whom I could never have written this book. And to my assistant, Tucker Gurley, without whom I would never have gotten through the last several years. Undying thanks also to all my family, especially the women in my clan, and most of all to my mother, Vijaya Lakshmi, because my story is also her story, and she has had the courage and grace to let me tell it as I see fit. My thanks also to Krishna's father, Adam Dell, and to Salman, for planting the seeds so many years ago over Tandoori on Lexington Avenue, for being a cheerleader and handing me Rousseau. Thank you to Susan Roxborough for being the kind of friend and in-house editor every writer should be lucky enough to have. Thank you to my many recipe testers, like Jolie Hunt, Judith Sutton, and my writing assistant, Caroline Perkins, as well as to those who read early versions or heard pieces of the book over late nights and many telephone calls, including Sharon Sperling, Kristen Powers, Bonnie Talker, Jason Comas, Dr. Sylvia Karasu, and so many, many more. And much gratitude goes to the late Nora Ephron for her generous mentorship in the last year of her life, for without whom this book would not have its title. Thank you finally to my late grandfather, K.C. Krishnamurthy, and my beloved grandmother, C.V.S. Rajalakshmi, for instilling in me the love of books and cooking, two things I could not live without. Dear listener, here are the recipes I've spoken about throughout the book. I hope you listen to them in your kitchen and even try them. I hope they bring as much joy to your life as they have to mine. They can also all be found in the PDF enhancement, which is included with this recording, so you can print it out and take it to the grocery store. And thank you for letting me share my story with you. Kumquat and ginger chutney. Serves 8 to 10. Quarter and pit 2.5 pounds of fresh kumquats and place them in a large bowl. Add 2 tablespoons of kosher salt. Mix this together and let it rest for about 2 or 3 hours or overnight in the fridge if possible. There have been times when I've left the bowl in the fridge for a week even, just because I've forgotten or been too busy to do the rest, and they are just fine. Great, in fact. The salt preserves the fruit. After that, put a deep pan on the stove on medium heat. When the pan is hot, pour in about half a cup of canola oil. After 2 to 3 minutes, or when the oil starts to shimmer, add about a teaspoon of fennel seeds. When they sizzle and darken just slightly, I'd say in about 2 to 3 minutes, depending on the heat of your stove, add about a dozen fresh curry leaves, torn into pieces. You needn't be precious about this, and actually, you needn't even rip them up, really. But I find people are more likely to eat the curry leaves with the rest of the chutney when they're ripped up, rather than whole, when they put them off to the side. Curry leaves aren't like kaffir lime leaves, or bay leaves, for example. You can eat them, and they actually have loads of vitamins. And they are glorious to bite into when you're least expecting it. Also, add 3 tablespoons minced fresh ginger. If you're too lazy to peel and mince, they do sell jars of freshly minced ginger at the Indian store, as well as good produce sections of grocery stores. I remember a brand being called Christopher Ranch. Anyway, now add 8 small serrano chilies that have been chopped or sliced in half lengthwise. And remember to use the seeds too. That's where the heat is. Stir the pan once all these ingredients are in, just for about a minute or two. Oh, and if you don't have serrano chilies, please by all means use any other hot green chili like jalapeno or bird's eye. Then add 6 whole fresh kaffir lime leaves and the kumquats. You can get kaffir lime leaves at Thai stores or Asian groceries. You want to keep the kaffir lime leaves whole because you don't want to ingest these, and I would remove them right before you put the chutney away in a jar so no one makes a fatal mistake. Stir all this really well. After 5 minutes, add 1/2 teaspoon of sambar or Madras curry powder and stir again. It's important to buy a really good brand of Madras curry powder. I like Agmark or 777 brand, and you can get all of these specialty ingredients at your local Indian store, or you can order them online anywhere in the world from kalustians.com. After 5 minutes more, stir in 1/2 cup of water and 2 tablespoons of light brown sugar. Now again, if you don't have brown sugar, use whatever sugar you have. Turbinado, sugar in the raw, palm sugar, jaggery, or just plain white sugar. It doesn't matter that much. I like jaggery or light brown best, but I get lazy too and just reach for the plain sugar sometimes. Stir all this well and make sure to get out all the clumps of sugar with the back of a wooden spoon. Now reduce the heat to medium low and cook, covering the pan, for about 10 minutes. You want to stir it intermittently to ensure the chutney doesn't stick to the bottom of the pan. If this happens, don't panic. Just stir in more water, I would say about 1/4 cup at a time, and scrub off the sticky bits on the bottom with your wooden spoon and mix that well. The mixture should remain thick and gooey. Cook just until the chutney has a chunky jam-like consistency. It should be spreadable. Store this in an airtight container. And when using, be sure not to put a wet spoon into it, or this will contaminate the chutney and leave it susceptible to spoiling prematurely. This is the golden rule when opening a jar of any pickle or preserve or jam. And trust me, you'll want to savor every little bit of this chutney. During kumquat season, or whenever I happen to see nice ones in the market in New York, which isn't always very often, I make huge vats of this stuff. Sometimes I hide it in the back of the fridge, so it doesn't get finished off mysteriously by other people who never cop to it. In California or Florida, where citrus grows, it's easier to find it during various parts of the year, but generally speaking, it's something you see in the markets during the winter months. You can also make this recipe with calamansi limes or Meyer lemons, but you have to add more sugar to compensate for the bitter notes in the peel of those fruits. And you might have to add double the water so the bitterness cooks out. Just boil it a little bit. If you're really curious about the most authentic version of this recipe, you can find it in my last book, Tangy Tart Hot and Sweet. There's a tangerine peel chutney recipe in the back where this is inspired from. Yogurt rice serves 8 to 10. In a large mixing bowl, combine 5 cups of cooked, room temperature white rice, basmati or Thai jasmine is what I prefer. With 4 cups plain whole milk yogurt and 1.5 teaspoons of salt. If you want, and you're trying to cut calories or fat, you can use low-fat yogurt, but it won't be as tasty. But I've done that a lot when I need to lose weight. Anyway, knead all this together with your hands. You can use a fork or a large spoon, but I assure you it will only come out best if you really mash and mix it with your hand. Your hand gets messy, but just scrape the excess off on the inside edge of the bowl. There's no better tool to use in your kitchen than your own hands. Cooking is done also by feel, so feel the rice and yogurt as you combine them together. You want to make them one single thing. It should be mashed enough so you could feed it to a baby. No lumps. And you can only get the lumps of rice out by doing it with your hands. If you have leftover rice that's cold from the fridge, I recommend you add a couple of tablespoons of water. Cover it and heat it back up for 2 to 3 minutes in the microwave so it softens and steams. Or on the stovetop, on a very low fire, so it steams back up to fullness. Remember to cover the saucepan in that case, too. Cold rice can have a hard and spiky mouthfeel and doesn't absorb the liquid in the yogurt. So this rice needs to be soft and mushy to be at its best. Then, stir in 2 cups of peeled and diced English cucumbers if it's in the spring or summer, or 2 cups of fresh pomegranate seeds if you're in the fall or winter. Now set this aside. I suggest pomegranate because it makes this dish look divine, providing texture and also an added tartness. But in the spring and summer when it's hard to find pomegranates, use peeled English cucumbers or even shredded carrot is good. My aunt also uses diced green or red bell pepper, but if you use bell peppers, then fry it along with the other stuff in the sauté pan I'm going to tell you about. So now, you want to take a small sauté pan and heat about 1/4 cup canola oil over medium heat. I know this seems like a lot of oil, but it's not because you're actually dressing all this rice and yogurt with it. This is where all your flavor is going to come from. After a few minutes, when the oil is hot and shimmering, but not smoking, add 2 tablespoons of white gram lentils. These are also known as urad dal. They're split white gram lentils. Sometimes they can be called black gram lentils, but they're called white because the black outer husk is hulled off of it. Also, this can be found at an Indian store or online at Kalistian's too. And they last in your pantry as long as any other rice or dry lentils do, which is, well, a long time. So get them and keep them, because when someone comes to your house who's allergic to nuts, you can substitute these fried lentils into the dish. You just have to fry them in a little bit of canola oil. No one who is an Indian ever thinks about frying lentils, but they add great crunch and protein to vegetables and rice dishes. Anyway, when they're just beginning to turn golden, about after, I'd say, 2, maybe 3 minutes, add in 2 teaspoons of black or brown mustard seeds and 1/2 teaspoon of asafoetida powder. In Hindi, asafoetida is called hing. In Tamil, it's called perungayam. It's a resin that's then powdered, and every Indian store will have it. This can also be found at Kalustian's. You want to stir this all briefly. You'll hear a popping sound when the mustard seeds begin to cook. It sounds like a mini version of what microwave popcorn sounds like. After just a minute, when the popping becomes more frequent, almost like when the sound of microwave popcorn is done and you need to take it out, add in 1 to 2 medium diced green serrano or jalapeno chilies and 12 fresh medium curry leaves that are torn into bits. You can add more serrano chilies or jalapeno if you like things spicy like I do. If you don't have serrano or jalapeno, use bird's eye. Use anything. It doesn't really matter. You can use dried red chilies as well if you only have those. And don't feel bad about it because this is pretty common to find in yogurt rice all over South India. I like the fresh bite of the green chili, but this is just another way to do it and perfectly fine. Stir for just 1 to 2 minutes, and then remove the pan from heat. All you want to do is really warm up these fresh ingredients. You don't want to burn them or even cook them to well done. As long as the lentils are light golden and the mustard seeds are popping furiously and fast, you're good. Seconds count here, so I recommend you have all your ingredients measured out and ready by the stove in the order they go in to save you from having to do this step over or from pausing this recording. This is good practice anyway, and in restaurants they call it having a mise en place. Every famous chef has some underling do this every day before they get there. Now, you want to pour the lentil mustard oil mixture over the rice and yogurt and stir well with a spoon. Now don't use your hands for this as the oil is really hot. You're going to hear a big whoosh sound. This is a really great sound because it means you're going to eat very soon. This dish should be served at room temperature or cold, and it's great for a summer lunch or dinner. If you're making it ahead, just stir in a bit of water to loosen it up and take it out of the fridge about 90 minutes to 2 hours before serving. If it's not cold when you're serving it, it's fine to add a couple of ice cubes and stir those in, really. You want the yogurt to be cold, but you don't want the rice to be so cold that it's hard or spiky. It should have a porridge or oatmeal-like texture to it. Chatpati chutney makes 1.5 cups. In a 2-quart saucepan, bring 4 cups of water to a boil. Add 1/4 cup of wet natural tamarind concentrate. I prefer bottled Lakshmi brand, and not only because it's my last name. It actually is spelled L-A-X-M-I, and I have sadly no financial interest in it, but it really is the best, better than the powders. Add 2 teaspoons of ground cumin, 2 teaspoons of ground coriander seed, and 1 to 2 teaspoons of cayenne powder, depending on your heat tolerance. I would add 1 teaspoon of cayenne powder to start, and then add a little bit as you go after you taste it. Remember that this is going to reduce, so you want to taste it at the end and see if it needs more cayenne. Anyway, you also want to add 20 dates that weigh in at about 4.5 ounces, which you've pitted and finely chopped. Add salt to taste, which to my taste is about 2 teaspoons kosher salt. Gently boil over medium heat for 25 to 30 minutes, stirring occasionally with a wooden spoon and mashing the date pieces to create a pulpy mixture. Don't cook this covered because you want the water to evaporate, but be careful it doesn't stick at the bottom, which it will want to do because of the sugar content in the dates and the tamarind. If this happens, don't worry. Just add a little bit more water. Scrape off the bottom sticky parts with the back of a wooden spoon and stir it all together so it's about even. And monitor it carefully. You may want to turn the flame down lower depending on how hot your stove runs. The finished chutney should look like a very loose jam or a thick barbecue sauce. Chili cheese toast. Serving 1. Set some butter on a counter to soften about 20 or 30 minutes before you start making this recipe, if you think about it enough in time. Mash together 2 to 3 minced serrano or other hot green chilies with a generous squirt of fresh lemon juice and a pinch of salt to taste in a mortar and pestle to create a relish. Take your time. You can make a big batch of this in your blender, but I find that for this small amount, a stone mortar and pestle is the fastest. To be honest, I never really think ahead to do the big batch, but if you have some other chili chutney or leftover green chili paste, that will work too. You can just use chopped chilies, but the lemon and salt really bring out the oils and the flavor in the chili. Hot sauce works in a pinch too, I guess, but then it's just a glorified open-faced grilled cheese, right? So I would use a green pureed hot chili for this, and I would add lemon and salt to it. If you can make a large batch and keep it in your fridge, you'll find that it's really useful to fling a dollop of into any dish or stew that needs a little bit of heat. Anyway, you want to set the relish aside. Generously butter 1 side of a slice of sourdough bread. Again, it's best to set the butter out on the counter a bit beforehand. I always tear the bread if I don't. Now flip the bread and spread a heaping teaspoon of the green chili relish on the other side of the slice. Your hands do get a bit buttery, but it doesn't matter. A bit of butter never hurt anyone. Top the chili relish with one slice of Munster or Monterey Jack cheese. If you have shredded cheese or cheddar cheese, that's totally fine to use too. Just canvas the whole surface with enough cheese. Now toast the bread, butter side down, in a covered, nonstick frying pan over medium heat. Cook for just 2 or 3 minutes until the cheese gets melty and soft. Then uncover the pan and cook for a minute more to crunch up the other side of the bread. Remove the toast from the pan with a spatula. Slice diagonally with a sharp and heavy knife and garnish each triangle with a small dollop of relish on top. This is a really great afternoon snack with tea or an easy appetizer when you have guests that visit unexpectedly. Cranberry Drano. This recipe serves, well, one, because I could never find anyone else willing to drink it. Brew a cup of hot green tea and dissolve 1 teaspoon of honey into it. Then, in a tall tumbler, vigorously mix 1/2 cup of organic, unsweetened, 100% cranberry juice, the kind that makes your lips purse when you drink it, 1 tablespoon of clear fiber powder, and 1 packet of Emergency brand vitamin C powder with the still hot green tea. Mix all of this together and then add 4 or 5 ice cubes. Drink it down with a straw immediately, because if you stop to take a breath, you will not finish the glass. Egg in a hole. This recipe serves one. Place a frying pan over medium heat. Drizzle 1 to 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil into the pan, shaking the pan so it distributes evenly. A good healthy pat of butter can be melted and used too, and actually gets a crispier crust on the bottom, but either is fine. Cut a hole about 1 inch in diameter in the center of 1 slice of sourdough bread. Toast 1 side of the bread in the pan for 2 to 3 minutes, or until just golden, and then flip the bread to the other side, adding a few more drops of oil, or butter if you're using that, to the pan if needed. Let the second side toast for just another minute or two. Now, gently crack 1 egg into the hole in the bread. Once the egg white is opaque, don't be afraid to shake the pan. Shake the pan to get more of the egg white distributed evenly. Now, delicately flip the bread over with the spatula, being really careful not to break the yolk, which should be nestled into the hole. Cook for a couple more minutes until the egg is cooked, but the yolk is still quivering slightly. Do not overcook this. Now, if you have a pan with a curved bottom, you may be able to flip the toast with just a flick of the wrist, but a spatula gives you more control and less room for embarrassment. Now, carefully transfer the bread from the pan to a plate and drizzle a bit more raw olive oil on top. Do this even if you use the butter, because there's nothing like first press, spiky, golden olive oil. Add a healthy pinch of fleur de sel or some other really fancy salt, as well as 4 to 5 turns of a pepper mill over the top. I like to use pepper that's crushed coarsely, but you can make your call on that. And that's it. Serve it hot. Khichdi serves 4 to 6. Rinse 1 cup of yellow or orange lentils, known as masoor dal in Hindi, and add 1/2 cup of white basmati rice until the water runs clear, and transfer them to a big stock pot. If you don't have basmati rice, Thai white jasmine rice will work just as beautifully. You can also rinse them directly in the stock pot, by the way, which is frankly what I do because I'm lazy and the amount of water you need to add isn't exact. So if there is residual water in the stock pot from rinsing, that's fine. You just want to wash the excess starch out of it. Just make sure you don't lose a lot of rice and lentils, tipping the water out into the sink while rinsing until it runs clear. That's why you may want to rinse it separately in a colander. Now, add 2 fresh bay leaves and 1 teaspoon salt and cover this mixture with 2 to 3 inches of water. As I said, don't worry about the exact amount of water. Add 3 inches if it's the first time you're making it and gauge how much water evaporates for next time. Bring this to a boil and then reduce heat to medium and cook for about 25 to 30 minutes. You can skim off any foam that appears during cooking with a shallow ladle and dump that in the sink. Be careful that the pot does not overboil. That's why you're going to stay at the stove and do all the other stuff, and that's why, also, it's not covered. Once you bring this to a boil, you want to lower the heat to medium. Don't forget to do that. Stir occasionally to prevent sticking. A bit of hot water can be added if you see that the water is getting evaporated too fast, or if you need to, but this is also an indication that you may need to lower the flame a bit. Meanwhile, heat 2 tablespoons of canola oil in a skillet over medium heat. When the oil is hot, add 1/2 teaspoon of cumin seeds. After a minute, when the cumin starts to sizzle a bit, add 1/2 cup of fresh chopped shallots and 2 tablespoons of fresh minced ginger. A word about the shallots. If you don't have shallots and you want to make this recipe and all you have are onions, be they red, white, or yellow, that's totally fine. I use shallots because that's what resembles South Indian onions the closest, but any onion will be fine. Stir this while sautéing. When the shallots, or onions, become glassy or translucent, I would say about 4 to 5 minutes, add 1/2 cup of diced bell pepper. It doesn't matter if it's green, red, yellow, or orange. And 1/2 cup of diced carrots, and stir continually to sauté. Add 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 1/2 teaspoon of madras or sambar curry powder, and stir. You can also use garam masala, which is a North Indian spice blend that most people have, instead of the curry powder. But if you do that, please add less, because North Indian garam masala is much more pungent than South Indian sambar curry powder. Now, I like to add fresh curry leaves with the curry powder, which has the unmistakable aroma, and when fried earlier, a nutty herbal taste that's so indicative of South Indian cooking. But you'll be adding them later, too, so either way is good. I just love to reinforce the flavor by adding a bit in 2 places in the cooking process. Cook 3 to 5 minutes more until done, but the vegetables should still be al dente, so don't overcook them. Remove from heat and cover to keep this warm. After 25 minutes of the lentil and rice mixture cooking, add the sautéed vegetables to the stock pot. Stir this all together. Remove it from heat or just turn off the stove. Again, don't lose track of time. The best way is to make sure you've chopped all your veggies and have them ready to go before you even wash the rice and lentils. Now add 1 cup of fresh, chopped baby spinach leaves and 1/2 cup of fresh cilantro, stirring well. You want to do this after you turn off the heat so that you don't cook out all the vitamins and chlorophyll from the baby spinach and the cilantro. That will diminish the taste, but it'll also diminish the nutrition. Taste and add a little more salt if it's needed. And in a separate pan, melt 1 tablespoon or more of butter. Add 1/2 teaspoon of coarsely crushed black peppercorns and cook over low heat just until fragrant and slightly brown. Now, a word about black peppercorns and spices in general. I prefer to crush or grind my whole peppercorns right before I'm going to use it. And I bet that's the case for all my spices, if I had to say. The reason is you retain more of the inherent oils and warm notes and flavors in these spices, which is why you're using them when you do this. If you just buy a store-bought tin of black pepper, it won't have the same aroma. If that's all you got, that's fine. Use that and let it simmer in the butter a little bit longer, hoping that you get as much flavor as you can coax out of it. Once the butter is golden brown, add 8 to 10 fresh curry leaves. You can rip these or leave them whole. I think it's nice to rip the earlier ones and leave these whole so that it's pretty for garnishing. Anyway, once you add the curry leaves, you don't want to fry this for more than 30 seconds. You just want to slightly heat up and singe the leaves, not burning them, not just like when they turn from that beautiful verdant green to a more dull or sagey green. That moment is when you should turn the stove off and whisk this butter mixture on top of the khichdi and serve it all warm. This khichdi should have a porridge-like consistency, sort of like hot oatmeal when it first gets poured into the bowl. Krishna's pickled peppers. Makes 1 dozen pickled peppers. In a measuring cup, mix 2.5 cups of distilled white vinegar, 3/4 teaspoon kosher salt, and 1/4 teaspoon of granulated sugar, and stir with a wooden spoon until it's completely dissolved. Set aside. This is something that you can ask very young children to do, and it makes them happy to do it. Now, cut a medium carrot weighing about 2 to 3 ounces into 1/4-inch thick slices, cut on the bias. What this means is you're going to cut diagonally about 1/4 inch thick, but you don't need to be precise with this. And slice 1/2 small yellow onion, weighing about 2 to 3 ounces, into 1/4-inch thick crescents. Put this in a large mixing bowl and add 12 medium fresh jalapenos or other hot chili peppers, like serrano, cherry, or whatever looks colorful and pretty at the market. If one jalapeno happens to be much bigger than the others, you can just slice it down the middle. That's what I do. You can even mix the peppers up, but if you do that, make sure all the peppers have about the same heat level. You don't want to play Russian roulette when it comes time to eating them months later. These peppers should weigh about 14 ounces in total. Now, pour in, on top of this, 1/2 teaspoon of whole coriander seeds and 1 teaspoon of Mexican oregano. People think that the best oregano comes from Greece or from Italy, but actually it comes from Mexico. And since you're pickling serrano chilies or jalapeno peppers, which is a Mexican exercise, I would recommend you use Mexican oregano. And by the way, I would recommend you use Mexican oregano all the time for everything, including those Greek and Italian dishes. Anyway, toss all this together with your hands to mix it evenly. And now, fill a 1-liter size pickling jar with the spiced vegetables, taking care to scrape any remaining spices from the bowl into the jar. Now, carefully pour the vinegar mixture into the jar, pressing the vegetables down with a wooden spoon if you need to. And you will need to. There's always this like 1/4 inch of jalapeno pepper and onion and carrot that will float above where the vinegar stops. You'll just have to pour a little bit more of white vinegar into it. It's not really a big deal. In traditional canning or pickling, they usually will push this down and have a layer of wax. You don't really need to do that. I just close the jar and leave it on my counter or in my fridge. And then every week or so, I turn the jar upside down so that section of those pickles that were trying to peek out from under the layer of vinegar will pickle properly. And that's all you need to do, really. The pickled peppers will be ready to enjoy in about 6 to 9 weeks. Applesauce for Teddy. Makes 4 cups. Core, peel, and cut 10 medium mixed apples into large chunks. My favorites are Fuji or Granny Smith green apples, but you can use any apples you like. They should weigh about 3 pounds total. Put these into a bowl and toss them with the juice of 1 medium-sized ripe lemon, which should yield about 2 tablespoons of juice total. Now take a deep pot and melt 1/2 cup or 1 whole stick of unsalted butter over medium-low heat. If all you have is salted butter, that's fine. Don't fret. You can use that. Once the butter is evenly melted and slightly brown, add the apples with their juices and stir. You want to cook this for about a minute. Now add to the pot the following. 1/2 cup of cane sugar, quarter teaspoon kosher salt, 1.5 tablespoons of ground cinnamon, and 1/4 teaspoon of ground cloves. Mix all this evenly and stir the pot vigorously to mix well. Raise the heat to medium and cover the pot. Cook covered for about 25 to 30 minutes, depending on how chunky you like your applesauce. You'll need to cook it longer for a smoother applesauce, as you'll want the apples to break down, and this takes a bit more time, and perhaps a bit more water, too. Every 5 minutes or so, you want to uncover the pot and stir briskly, breaking up the chunks of apple with the side of your spoon and making sure it's not sticking on the bottom. Then replace the lid. Remember, the longer you cook the applesauce, or the more you break up the apple chunks, the less tart your apples are going to be. I like the mix of sweet and tart together, but you do this to your taste. And remember, if there's some sticking, it's fine. Just add a bit of warm water and stir the bits that are sticking to loosen off the bottom of the pan. And that's it. Just keep it in an airtight container in the fridge and add a tablespoon or two of water when reheating if you want to loosen it up. You can serve this warm, and you can serve it with a scoop of ice cream on top. This is Padma Lakshmi. This production of Love, Loss, and What We Ate, a memoir, was directed by Kevin Thompson and recorded at Beat Street Studios in New York City. Engineered by Bob Barito. It was produced by Thompson Scott Productions. Executive producer, Katie Ostroka. Text copyright 2016 by Padma Lakshmi. Production copyright 2016 by HarperCollins Publishers. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.